Guys, have you tried? Let me ask you this. This is important. Have you tried lemonade and seltzer?
Are you for real?
Think about it. Lemonade, which you love, and seltzer, which you also love, but combined.
It's called sparkling lemonade. They sell it at the store.
Sell this in cans at the store, Russell.
Yeah, but they probably copied me, right?
I don't think San Pellegrino is like, hey, I know this fucking nobody. And he mixes his drinks together in a wild and profitable way. I'm going to rip him. I'm going to get him.
I think it sounds great, Russ. I live in a market where the only soda available is Diet Big K. So I'm so excited to hear that I can sort of backwards manufacture my own
Justin,
sparkling lemonade.
Can I ask you a question, Justin? And this is a serious question. Yeah. If you went into your grocery store where you live and you asked, sir or ma'am, may I have a San Pellegrino limonata? Would they bully you and punch you in the stomach? And then when you go down, pull up your underwear over your head?
Yeah, Justin, I think what Chris is trying to drink is, because that's a smart drink, and as we all know, you live in a place of dumb blue collar people.
I think they would probably react the same way that every grocery store employee has reacted for the past decade. When you ask them where something is, they would stare at you, and then they would lie down on the floor completely still until you walked away and found it for yourself.
It's very effective.
My name is Justin McElroy, and I know the best game of the month.
My name is Griffin McElroy, and I know the best game, only good game of the month.
My name is Chris Plant, and I know the best lemon beverage this month.
My name is Russ Frushing, and I know the best game of the week. Mm. My wife is working from home today.
Thank you for not waking up our babies.
Christopher, it's CC Lemon. It's CC Lemon, right? Gotta be that CC Lemon.
CC Lemon? No, it actually is San Pellegrino Lemonade.
Okay, whatever.
I love that drink.
No, okay, hold on one second, though, because none of these are really lemonade and seltzer, or at least the proper mix that I'm talking about.
We're in the show now. We can't keep talking about lemonade. We're in the show now.
One of the things we talk about on this show is
Besties, where we talk about the latest and greatest in lemon drinks and video games.
You eyeing my lemon drink?
You guys see that happening? This month, though, it's going to be a little bit more focused on video games. You know, they've come a long way.
But some lemon drink content. There will be
a little bit lemon drink content. Yes.
I just wanted to say I need to water down San Pellegrino because it's too much, guys.
It's pretty
intense.
Can I also just say I want to apologize to the people of Griffin and Justin's hometown, because if there was anybody who would know how to make lemons or lemonade out of lemons, oh my God.
Forget it.
What dumb town
Forget
are you
it.
From,
Forget
Chris Plant?
Your apologetics are worthless to me now.
Yeah.
Classist. This was a weird month in a lot of ways. There's not as many days in February, so maybe that's why there weren't games. It's just there weren't enough days for it. But this is going to be a weird episode of Besties, because we were talking about what to bring, and I don't know, two of us are bringing like 4-year-old games, so it should be a pretty lively bout, I feel
like. Yeah, it's almost like you guys didn't really have a lot of time to play video games this year.
Imagine that. Congratulations, Chris and Justin, for the beautiful babies, these wonderful little folks.
Yeah, and you guys were recording in the hospital, so we're going to release a bonus episode of that, right?
Mm-hmm. Of course. okay. Yeah, I've played a lot of idle games to try to have something to do, because there's a lot of staying up late, and I don't really have the mental capacity for most games. But like, I can click on I spent fucking literally a dozen hours on an idle game that I am currently trying to remember the name of and cannot.
Oh no.
Oh my gosh.
God.
Hey, boy. Justin. Idle click hero lords? Idle something. So there's one like Idle Heroes, maybe? I don't know. It doesn't matter.
I feel like I've had the exact opposite where I started playing Monument Valley 2. Oh my gosh. What's the surf on sand game?
Journey?
No. The mobile one. Alto's
Adventure.
And like I was like, oh, this is perfect. Something I can play anytime I want. It's super easy, relaxing. And I don't know, I sunk like an hour and a half into it off and on. And I was chasing some dumb objective where I have to perform a certain type backflip off of a certain cliff to just progress. And my reaction now is like, I have literally 1 hour in the day that is for me. Why am I doing this? Why am I doing anything that is not joyful?
Almost a Hero was the name of this game. And it's a clicker game that requires
oh my gosh,
a little bit of skill and strategy, because you really do have to optimize what mystical gems you're upgrading to clear the boss monsters more quickly. If you like this sort of game, it's a very good one. It's called Almost a Hero.
It's Soda Dungeon again.
What? Yeah.
I wish it
had the Soda Dungeon levels of depth and interactivity.
I want to go back to Chris Plant's hour a day. What do you do in that hour, Chris Plant?
Right now? I'll be honest. I've expanded. I think I probably have like 2.5 hours now.
Whoa.
What? Yeah.
Where are you getting them? Oh, you only got one. All right.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I went through a similar thing like last year, and it's honestly why I sort of bumped with a lot of the games that we brought to Besties, or that you guys brought to Besties. It's funny, we were literally, right before we started recording, Russ was talking about how he was playing Horizon Zero Dawn, and that's one game that just like the intro to that was a little too slow for my taste, and I was like, well, if this is it, like I appreciate it, it's a very good game, but like I just don't have the time. I don't know. I am so vicious about how I spend my free time with games these days. Like it's got to be a jammer or no thank you.
Very picky.
Does anybody have any other honorable mentions that they want to bring? I played a lot of fucking Monster Hunter at like 3 a.m. If you saw me pop on there, get a few Anjanaths there around 4 a.m.
I'm playing it.
Guy Hoops. They thought they were fine. Oh, it's 4 a.m. We're good. Let's get out there.
Poker night down in my den.
Monster Hunter. There. Don't bring your, bring all your gems. It's going to be fine. There's nobody there to hunt us now.
It clicked for me finally. I was talking last month about how I couldn't get into these games, and it did click for me, mostly when one monster pile-drived another monster through a bunch of raptors and a tree fell on him. I was like, okay, this game is
it's fucking
badass.
It is. I've now spent a lot of time. This is basically the only game that I played in February. Like all my free time was spent playing Monster Hunter World. It is I really talked it up last week and how it was a great game. I think it's a fucking masterpiece, and I think it's going to be pretty tough to dethrone it in my mind.
Here's what I'm going to say. As someone that is now playing through Horizon very late, it is interesting because they obviously have a lot of similarities, specifically the idea of like breaking certain parts of a monster off to weaken them. And I can't help but think, like, I wish that, like, Monster Hunter controlled as smoothly as Horizon does.
You're wrong.
What's interesting is I actually felt that the game didn't click with me until I found and I think a lot of people could probably have this experience, until I found the weapon that made it feel like the kind of game I wanted to play.
Yeah.
I was enjoying a lot with the longsword, and then when I finally started using the bow, I had the level of flexibility sort of you're talking about to take out the specific parts that I was looking for. And I had enough distance usually that like I wasn't just getting my shop wrecked constantly. And it was when I was like, oh, okay, this is how I want to play. And this weapon really like matches my play style. And I think that's really interesting and cool that like it really does make it a completely different game. Depending on what items you are proficient in.
You talked about the controls not being smooth, but like I used to think that way until I played a lot of Monster Hunter, and now I recognize that like it is a different way of handling combat than any other game really tries for, in so far as that it is entirely just about sort of like animation priority rather than just like jamming on a button in this like fluid, like cookie cutter kind of way. It's almost more like a rhythm game in that regard. And sure, every weapon category kind of has its own rhythm that you have to master. And every monster has its own rhythm. And then figuring out like what attacks you can get in where during which animations and how your animations are.
Oh boy, he got so worked up.
Too excited.
And how your animations can kind of like interrupt theirs is like, it's a different way of doing it. But I would argue that it is not like unsmooth.
I get it. I understand it. You know, in all fairness, I also like haven't, at once I like, once it clicked for me and I like understood why people play these games, I haven't had a driving desire to go back weirdly. Because it was like, oh, this is awesome. Totally. But like, I know that I'm 15 to 30 hours away from like the like intense micromanagement, like min maxing elements to the point where I was like, I'm good. And then I just haven't gone back. I like it, and I'm excited. Like once it comes to a platform that I like, Switch. I mean, World won't come to Switch because it can't run. But like another Monster Hunter game coming to Switch.
I mean, there is Double Cross that came to Japan, but never came to America.
And
it would be hard to go back at this point.
Yeah, it didn't come to America because this was still, despite the fact that it's been running for a long time and usually found a lot of success in Japan, this was not a, you know, smash hit franchise for them until Monster Hunter World is one of, if not the best selling game in Capcom's history. It is a huge hit for them. And now because of that, like I that's what makes me so excited. One, that more people are playing it because it's a franchise I'm enthusiastic about, but also because like they're going to do so much more shit with it now that it's commercially viable worldwide. Like that rules.
Anyway, that's an old game.
That is. I played a game called Slay the Spire. That I think's been out for a while. It's a really cool like deck building roguelike RPG.
What's the platform?
I played it on Steam. It is. I should say I have not spent too much time playing it, but basically you are in a dungeon and you're going through battles, and as you like complete battles, you sort of move down this branching pathway of a map. So you're choosing whether you want to go into like a battle with a regular enemy or a tough battle with more rewards or like a rest area where you can heal or a shop. And every round of battle you have like three energy points, say, and you spend those on the cards that you draw out of your deck. And some, you know, different abilities take different amounts of energy. So you're trying to figure out how to best utilize each turn, and you see what your opponent's about to do, and you try to figure out the best way to sort of like counteract that while dealing damage and not taking too much damage yourself, because it sort of lasts. It carries on from round to round. That's like the basics of it. But the game is so smart about how much variety there is in all the different cards you collect, and your deck is something that you are building as you go. Like each fight you might find one or two new cards, and you have to choose which ones you add in. There's also certain opportunities you'll have to actually remove cards from your deck because maybe you've hit a point where they're just too weak to be viable, or your deck strategy has gone in a different way, and so now you want to just get those cards out so you're not pulling just trash while you're going through a fight. It's a really slick game that I want to invest more time into. Be a lot easier to do so if it was on mobile or something like that, but it's a good little game.
Anyone else with...
Yeah, I have the generic, hey, thing is good on Switch with Bayonetta and Bayonetta 2.
I don't think the first game is good.
What?
I don't think the first game is that good.
The first game is not nearly as good as Bayonetta 2.
Yeah, the second one is excellent. The
people who are casual action game players.
Yeah,
the casuals.
Bayonetta 2, oh my god. Bayonetta 2 also just feels like a final draft of Bayonetta 1. Like, they finally got to do the thing they wanted to do.
It's also past that era. I think we did probably talk about Bayonetta 2, like, 2 years, 3-4 years ago on the podcast when it first came out. But they also, when the first one came out, was in the thick of Gears of War, like, next-gen Browns. Which is to say, like, dreary and, like, depressing. And Bayonetta 2 is, like, very much not that. It's colorful and silly and over the top.
Bright. Very bright. But yeah, I was shocked, one, how well it runs, and two, with having had trouble with shooters on Switch, though, I will say, I went back to Doom after the patch update.
Yeah, that made a big difference.
Cow,
I can totally play it now.
It made a huge difference.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's what I found with Bayonetta, is that you could play this really complex action game and feel like you're getting the input right, and also just runs beautifully. I assume it's running better than it did on Wii U in handheld mode, which is,
I mean, it's funny to say it runs, I mean, it ran really well on Wii U, but like, it's also a 4-year-old game that ran really well on Wii U.
Yeah,
like,
so
if
it's
it
not,
didn't run well,
yeah,
that
I mean,
would be a
you
problem.
Look at it, it does not look like a game that should run well on,
no, you're right, it's amazingly well optimized.
Yeah. And then the other thing that I want to mention is a game called Membrane, which is a kind of side-scrolling, not even that, like, puzzle platformer shooter that's 2D from NYU. I don't think it's published by Adult Swim, but it has that kind of, like, grimy, zine, old Adult Swim aesthetic. And I believe you are, like, a creature inside a hallucinogenic body, and you have to collect like little balls that are located on each kind of room. I know this is very plain.
I'm watching a clip of this right now, and good luck describing this fucking game.
Well, the simple mechanic of it is you can shoot two things at first. Projectiles, they stick. So you can, like, if you shoot them against a wall, it'll make a bridge that comes up from the wall, but it's somewhat physics influenced, so like if it's too big, it'll weigh it down and it'll like droop towards the ground. Or you could shoot beneath you to like put yourself up onto the top of a tower, and then you can shoot another object that disintegrates those things, and then you have to collect the residue to like build up your ammunition of the sticky goop that you use to navigate spaces. So it's not really a like shooter scrolly thing. You are more like, I don't know, kind of 2D portal-y. And that,
yeah,
like,
it's 2D portal. Using, like that 2D Flash Portal game that came out.
Yeah, and it's just very smart. It has some issues that I think all of these games have if they are not made by Valve or Nintendo, in that the ramping up of difficulty is a little messy. I found myself, like, I would have, like, very hardcore, like, oh, I am now suddenly just really hitting my head against something early on, and then getting past it and like zipping past a few levels.
Yeah.
But beyond that, man, it's really fun, and it is a perfect game for Switch in that it's those, like, here's just a small level that would work on mobile, on a phone, but having the control of Switch makes it so much more enjoyable.
Yeah, this looks neat. This looks like something I can get into. I haven't played like a good, like, I feel like a couple years ago I was playing like 4 like puzzle platformers, 2D and 3D, like a year, and I haven't really played a good one in a while. I was watching clips from you remember that game Antechamber? I was watching clips from that and getting all nostalgic because I played that for a long time. All right, what are we doing this time?
Bring it for real. Bring the heat.
Yeah.
I'll start. I am bringing a game called The Fall 2. Unbound. Now, if you remember The Fall, that would be surprising, because The Fall Part 1 was released like 4 years ago, and it was supposed to be an episodic game, I suppose. This is from a developer called Over the Moon, that I have to assume is a small house, but it was released in May of 2014, the first one. And if you haven't played it, and I'm sure there's a lot of people who haven't, I won't sort of spoil what the hook of it is, but The Fall is about the relationship of an AI combat, a combat-based AI that is piloting a suit, basically, to try to get a astronaut, I think, back home. Again, it's been many years since I played the original Fall. But it's about the AI sort of becoming aware of itself and creating its own determination. And The Fall Part 2 is sort of about the AI deciding that its number one rule is now to preserve itself, and it is going to find the user that is trying to get rid of it and destroy them.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, but the Arid, which is the name of the AI, does not currently, as the game begins, have a body to speak of. So the game is sort of in two different phases, if you want to call them that, I guess, realities, I don't know. But in the one reality, you are Arid, but you're sort of piloting Arid inside an AI software consciousness that is represented physically. Think like Reboot or something like that. A lot more simple than that, but you're within the programming and you're trying to find basically nodes that can help you connect to the outside world somehow. And when you're in that reality, there is some light run and gun 2D like action where you've got a pistol and you're shooting rogue programming that is trying to destroy you. And then you find nodes, and I think there's like three different ones, so it's sort of broken up into chunks like that. But you find these nodes that let you take control of a robot that is working in the real world. And the interesting thing about it is that you have to work within the programming of the robot that you're controlling. So you're sort of like inhabiting the robot's body along with the robot's own programming, talking to that robot about what you're trying to do and what you need to achieve, but they are unwilling. The first sort of node that you'll encounter is a robot butler that is waiting on its previous owners. I say previous because both the owners have died and are still in the house that this robot butler lives in, but the robot butler continues to carry out its programming every day. So every day it's making the tea, taking the tea to its gentleman master, and then going and opening the windows for its lady master and putting on her lipstick as it did every day. And you have to find, I know, but you have to find, you have a goal of like that, the former deceased master has information somewhere in their house that you need to fight back against the user that's trying to destroy you. So you have to find ways of sort of interrupting the robot's programming and sort of fooling it into helping you because it won't work.
I would eat the lipstick. Eat the lipstick.
Wow, you already you must be looking at game boomers because it is, step one, eat the lipstick. But it's those parts are really interesting. I'm not crazy about the shooting parts. They're like it's pretty bare bones and not particularly great, but it feels like it needs something to break the pace of the other ones, which is kind of turgid. I would say in another program you are
turgid,
swollen and distended or congested. What's like a not that.
Yeah, I was thinking of...
Okay, how about this? Slow.
Okay. Yeah.
How's that? Slow pace. Deliberate, if you will. And in the second... In one of them that I'm in right now, the you're controlling an AI that does... controlling a robot that has training in martial arts. And that's handled through sort of like a timing-based waves of enemies coming at you. And you have to tap on the side of you that corresponds to where the enemies are coming from. And that's how they sort of handle the combat there. But those bits are actually pretty well done.
That half of the game sounds really cool to me. The other half does not sound as cool to me.
The shooting parts are not particularly interesting, but they are brief. They're a connective tissue between the sort of other more like puzzle oriented chunks. The only other thing I'll say is, and this is like, the game's not popular enough to sort of have the amount of like forum chatter that I would need to diagnose this issue, but I'm playing on my PS4 Pro and it is very dark to a point where I have trouble like making things out, and that's with the brightness cranked up 100%. And I checked out some videos of people playing on PC on YouTube, and it is not the same scenario.
Are you using the HDR?
I turned the HDR off, and that helped somewhat, but it is not completely improved. So,
that is weird.
Yeah, it's a very weird issue. I've never had anything like it on the. It is a dark game already, and in a lot of the very short on sort of like big vibrant color. a lot of blacks and whites with color just used to like accent. So I think I could see where it'd be easy for something to get like lost in the shadows, but it's really interesting. It does really cool. It asks really cool questions about AI and seeing an AI sort of like rectify its place in the world and its own self-determination is really interesting. I would recommend playing the first Fall. You can get it for $10, and it's very cool and would probably be a nice companion piece. Again, I don't have that perspective necessarily because I played it so friggin' long ago. But there is a recap. If you did play it a while back, there's a recap at the beginning of this, so you can sort of like play catch up. I would say it's not required, but
I think it should be required that all developers put that shit in their sequels. Because I downloaded Bayonetta 2 to play it on an airplane, and I got in, and then there's Bayonetta, and then there's Joe Pesci, I guess, and then there's the.
I want to make a recommendation for everybody who is listening for Bayonetta and Bayonetta 2 is the game's just as good if you hit skip cutscene every single time.
Well, the cutscenes are very cool, but I've probably I played the entire Bayonetta 1 and I'm like 2/3 of the way through Bayonetta 2, and I have no idea who anyone is, and that's not because I forgot from the first game. I know there are witches. And I know heaven and hell are not happy with each other, but everything else, I have no idea what's going on.
There's this amazing thing that I found on YouTube after playing Nier Automata. Just wanted to mention that one more time.
Yeah.
That there are people who take all the cutscenes from games like Bayonetta that are confusing, or like just a lot of garbledy gook, and they cut them all together into like a 20-minute movie.
Yeah,
and I've really enjoyed watching the movie and playing the game.
What do I search
and
for
skipping
when I'm doing
cutscenes? I like Bayonetta story summary.
Okay,
Shenmue 2 had this in like a separate disc, and it was like a DVD of Shenmue 1, the movie. And I remember thinking like, "Oh God, thank you."
I remember Alan Wake did it.
Yeah, a few places have done it. Anyway, none of this is anything. Justin, that game sounds neat.
It is a neat game. It's $15. Check it totally out.
Do you want me to?
That is the highest end of my official
scale. I'll do a thing that is not a game so we can break those up.
Yes.
Okay.
Is it not a game or is it all games?
Both. my thing is the upgraded Xbox, I guess they say it's Xbox One X backwards compatibility. I mean, really, it's backwards compatibility across the thing, but it's especially nifty with what they're doing with One X. And maybe the first real justification of the Xbox One X, which is still a terrible name. Now there are a handful of Xbox 360 and I believe Xbox original games that have been further upgraded to take advantage of the power on the X. The two that I recommend you probably have if you are a long-term Xbox player.
If you're a
Crackdown.
Real gamer.
What?
If you're a real gamer.
Yeah, if you're like legit, you know, like you're not a joke. Crackdown and Forza Horizon 1. But Crackdown especially, I have been so jazzed for Crackdown 3 to come out. I'm still jazzed. I'm still hopeful.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you still jazzed?
You know what? I enjoyed it when I played at E3, but let's forget that. Being able to play that game on a fancy, nice new TV and have it run so well and look so good. I mean, it looks like doing what I do with like Red Faction Guerrilla on my PC, where being able to go back to a game and just completely max it out and just have it run silky smooth. Being able to do that in console is so neat. It's not perfect. Forza Horizon is a great example of how imperfect it is. They boost the resolution towards infinity, and it looks great. But one thing that I don't know if they will solve is Forza Horizon, when it was released, was locked at 30 frames per second because it was an open-world racing game. And the game is still locked at 30 frames per second because the game was released with a hard lock. So as great as it looks, you get the sense that, wow, like it could be pushed further. There are two options on all of these games now, where it's so weird because they had to cook it into the Xbox 360 menu. So like when you play an Xbox 360 game, if you hit the like select and start, it does the old X button menu. But now it has Xbox One X settings in the old grainy Xbox 360 menu.
Weird.
Yeah. And you can pick basically graphics focus or performance focus, which again is not the level of customization on PC, but it still is cool that they are trying to, I think, make a simplified version of that. And I don't know.
Like, what is the difference with Crackdown? Like, what?
Negligible, in my experience. I don't think you see a lot in general with those games, at least the ones that I've played, just because, like, it's not taking that much to run them to begin with. Like,
right.
I think that'll be more of a thing as, like, third-party developers get involved in this, that hey, I don't want to put as much resources into, like, making sure this all works. So one really boosts the resolution and one just makes it run well. But the weird thing about this is like,
it noticed that, like, is the difference, like, I realize it's been a while since you played it on 360, but.
Oh, so actually, not only is it noticeable in that way, I played Crackdown on an Xbox One, like, when they made it backwards compatible. And
okay.
It looked like garbage. It did not run well. It was a bad enough experience that I put it down pretty much right away.
Yeah.
Are you playing a disc, by the way, or can you download this?
No, you can download it.
Oh, cool.
And you might need disc for Forza. I tried downloading a version of it, and I was having, like, some region lock issue. But, yeah, it looks like a very, like, hands-off remaster. Not a remaster, but, like, up-res. It doesn't look like, oh, hey, I'm playing an Xbox 360 game on my Xbox One.
So I understand.
That's a significant enough change. The other weird thing, and I don't know how this is working, maybe I'm just seeing things, but I tried Catherine, which is not listed as one of these like mega upgrades, but I love the game and wanted to see what it looked like on Xbox One, and it looks ridiculously good. It looks like a full upscale conversion, and I know that they're releasing that game again on PS4, and they're not on the Xbox, and I'm sure the real reason they're not releasing it on Xbox is because there's just no interest in Japan for Xbox at this point,
yeah.
Or at least not big enough. But at the same time, I don't know if you would even need it, because you can get it for cheap, and it looks absolutely fantastic and runs so much better than it did on 360 on Xbox One and X right now.
You're saying is everyone should rush out and buy an Xbox One X.
Yeah, no. But
this
if
is
you
only,
have
this is only
one,
on X. I can't do this on.
No, you can do backwards compat on normal, but it's like hard to tell because so much of like how Microsoft is promoing it is all about, oh, if you want this really high level 4K output, you need to have X. And I don't know if maybe that is even that. I don't know if maybe Xbox One and Xbox One S can output 4K at beyond 24 frames. I don't know.
I could not care any less about whether that. It's just I. What's it gonna take, man, for me to pick up on these X's?
It's even worse because like I have the X because I was like, oh, I have 4K, I have HDR, I want to take advantage of this. I want like. I can justify it by saying like, oh, I want to see how it works. Let me tell you, I have not consistently managed to get it to output 4K plus HDR plus anything beyond mono sound at the same time. Yeah. It is trying to figure out HDR has been the most infuriating thing.
It sucks.
Not just the X.
The
TVs don't always. The Samsung used to say when HDR was on, now it doesn't. No, they literally removed that with an update. Receivers, even new receivers, some of them do HDR, but only some things in HDR. Right now, I have it so that if I want to watch HDR movies, I can do that through my Xbox to my receiver to my TV. But if I want to play HDR games on the Xbox, I need to go direct to my TV and then like basically input out from TV to receiver with digital audio. And then, but then with my PS4, it can feed HDR games through the receiver, but I haven't gotten like HDR movies on Netflix to work.
You know what always works? Just a pack of playing cards.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
never fails.
Also, it just never feels worth it. Like, I know everybody loves all of that stuff, but when you have that much headache, it would need to be drastic to feel like, oh, I'm really glad that I used 2 hours to figure this out, and the brights are brighter.
We don't have to do halftime, right?
You want to talk more about Lemonade?
Griffin, what did you bring?
I brought a game that is probably going to be a top five contender for me this year. I'm so deeply in love with it. It is called Into the Breach.
Damn, you're filling up your goaty slots here in
Monster Hunter World, Celeste, and Into the Breach, right? These three are definitely going to be part of the conversation for me when we get to the end of the year.
How did Subnautica slide past Celeste and...
You know what? I stand by it as someone that went back and actually finished Subnautica.
I'm not downing Subnautica. I'm just...
No, it's better. It's great.
It's very bad, right?
Really? Okay, but I will say this. I had not finished Celeste when we talked about it last week or last month, and the ending of that game blew me the fuck away.
And you still haven't seen the real ending.
I've actually been going back to do the 100% collectibles. I adore that game. Anyway,
did you do the volcano thing?
That's what I'm working on now. I just got enough hearts to do it. Okay.
Oh, okay.
So
great level.
Into the Breach is the new game from Subset Games, which you may remember from FTL, Faster Than Light, which was a very good game. I loved it. I know that I think Russ was probably the biggest kind of advocate for it here.
I love FTL.
It's a great game. It was a roguelike. Where you piloted a spaceship and the spaceship had different sort of stations and you had to assign pilots to those stations and assign power to those stations and you would get
very
fights.
Complicated.
Very complicated, kind of deliberate in that you knew based on like what your ship was capable of and how you would assign pilots and power, kind of how a fight was going to play out. You would see the enemy ship and kind of see what they were capable of, figure out your plan of attack and react to theirs. In a way that was, like I said, like kind of deliberate. You could pretty much figure out what was going on. That game, I never finished it. Mostly because one, I still felt like even though it was kind of deliberate in how it showed you how a battle was going to play out, it wasn't always like 100% clear, and there was a lot of fingers crossed, man, I hope that they don't attack me here.
The learning curve was long.
Not just learning curve. There was an element of randomness to it.
Sure, that's true.
And it wasn't oppressive. It wasn't like constant, but it was like if you got attacked in the one spot where you didn't want to get attacked, it was like, oh, well, there goes my whole fucking plan. Also, the other problem with that game is that the final boss was kind of bad, and it really required you to have your ship built in a very specific way. And you could play through the game with a ship and blow through it and be firing on all cylinders. But then when you got to this one boss fight at the end, it was like, oh, well, I didn't have the exact ship I needed to take this down. And that was frustrating and not great design. Still a good game. Yeah. And a sort of revolutionary one for like the roguelike kind of genre. I think Into the Breach is in every conceivable way a better game and a sophistication of that like roadmap that FTL laid out for it.
Yeah, I agree.
It is a game that takes place, it is sort of a strategic turn-based mech combat game where you control three mechs on an 8x8 grid map, or rather a series of missions that take place on these 8x8 grids.
It's like an isometric point of view.
Isometric point of view, cool pixel graphics, and every turn you control these three mechs and you can move and take one action. With your mechs, and you'll be taking those actions in response to your enemies, who are these usually massive insects called the Vec. And every turn, the enemies will move, and they will ready an attack. And maybe that means that there is a hornet that is going to stab forward on its next turn. Or maybe there's a beetle that's going to launch like some explosive goo on its next turn. Or maybe there's a beetle who's going to charge forward and attack whatever it collides with on its next turn. There will also be other sort of things that will happen in these like preparation stages. You will see cracks start forming in the ground, and this is where new enemies are going to spawn on the next turn. And if you can put something on top of those cracks, you will block that spawn for one turn and deal damage to whatever's on top of it. But you see laid out before you what is going to happen. And then you have one turn to prevent it. Mm-hmm. And there's so many things that play into that that make this game I've spent last night I finished my first hard mode run of this game. It took me about 4 hours, which is significantly longer than any other run that I've had to take. And that is because I spent one turn. I spent about 15 minutes just looking at this 8x8 grid and these basically like four enemies that were attacking, and tried to figure out what I could do to prevent damage to the different buildings that are all around, because every time a building is attacked, you lose grid power, which is health, kind of like your health bar, right? If you take too much grid power damage, you lose the game. Also trying to figure out how to keep my mechs from getting destroyed, because if your mech gets destroyed, you can't use them for the rest of the battle, and the pilot inside of it dies. Trying to figure out how to do things like block spawns and push enemies into the path of other enemies, so that their attacks will not only not hit buildings and not hit mechs, they will actually deal damage to the enemy team. I spent 15 minutes just like, there's gotta be a fucking solution in here somewhere. I just have to find it. And what's so satisfying about this game and the way that it's built and the different variety in the mechs and the different attacks that you can use as those mechs and then different upgrades that you can get, there almost always is. There almost always is a solution. It's just a question of, are you going to be able to figure it out?
And I think what's amazing, because when I first started playing the game, there's similarities to games like Fire Emblem, turn-based strategy games like this. But what's amazing is we're talking about, you always only have three mechs. Like, that's the maximum number of units that you could possibly move. And the sheer number of options that you have with those three mechs and their minimal moves, as Griffin attested, is outrageous. It's just so cool that you can.
But it's really, it's like all simple. Like, on theory, yes. In the surface, if you were to like write it out, like, okay, I could punch that thing. Okay, well, right. It'll do 2 damage. Okay, that's easy to understand. Okay, well, if you punch it, it's going to fly back 1 square and hit that other thing and do damage. Oh, cool. Well, I want to do damage to both. Okay, cool. But there's this other thing where there's a sort of one of the Vec is like boosting all the enemies, where if they die, they'll put out an explosion. Okay, so if you hit that one, it's going to kill that one, and then it'll explode. And your other mech is next to that. So aren't you going to want to move that first? Okay, well, now it's in the way of this. Like, it's layers upon layers on layers, but it's
and
all
you can
very
see
conceivable.
All that.
Yeah, you can, like, see it. You can
it's
visualize
so
it.
It's so visual.
The secret to the game, and, like, the way to succeed when you try to take on hard mode, which is, like, and again, like, I think it's a better game than FTL, because it while FTL was kind of deliberate in how it showed you what was going to happen in each fight, there is no confusion in Into the Breach. You see exactly what's going to happen, and it is usually a lot. It is when you first see the enemy's moves laid out on the grid before you, it is chaos and it seems fucking impossible. In hard mode, there could be 6 enemies on the map all about to take individual actions, either threatening your mechs or threatening buildings. And you've only got the 3 mechs, or if you get the acid tank deployables or have like special map sort of considerations, because each mission is different. Sometimes there's like a tidal wave that'll come in that you can push enemies into. There are, you know, mines on the map that you can push enemies into to freeze them or kill them. But you only have these 3 moves most of the time. How can I spend my 3 moves negating 6 enemy actions?
Yeah.
So the game really becomes about making your one turn accomplish 2 or 3 or even 4 things, whether that is, say, you move like an artillery, like long range attack mech onto a spawn spot, That's like one move in the future that you have saved yourself, right? That's one enemy you don't have to deal with in the future. So that's like one action you've done. And then you shoot into an enemy to knock it so that its attack isn't going to hit a building. Okay, that's a second thing that you've accomplished. And also when you moved it, you pushed it in the way of another enemy whose attack you have also now blocked. That's three things that now you've accomplished. Like what you have to try to figure out. And trying to figure out those combos that you can use to maximize your efficiency with each turn, like that's the level of complexity. And there's not just one solution for these things. There's hundreds, there's dozens, if not hundreds of solutions that you can accomplish. Again, with these three mechs taking one action each.
Can you talk I just wanted to ask something. Could you talk a little bit about progression? Because even if somebody's played it a couple hours, it's still kind of confusing to me what does and doesn't carry over from run to run.
Yes. So while you're playing, before you start, you choose your squad. And I think there's 8 or 10 squads in the game that you unlock with coins, and you earn those coins by completing achievements, which basically require you to like use those mechs in weird ways. Like there's a laser mech that shoots a laser that can penetrate enemies, and you have to like hit 4 enemies with one shot, and you get the achievement for that. And each squad has 3 different mechs in it, and each one kind of has different abilities, like, you know, the laser mech or the artillery freezing mech that can shoot like a freezing blast at an enemy, or a mech that can jump forward, and whenever it lands, it knocks everybody away. So you have like those different teams. You also have one pilot that you start out with. You can choose what mech that they go in, and that pilot can be a survivor from a previous run. So if you do a run and it's going well and you win or you lose or whatever, you get to choose from your surviving pilots at that point to send back in time. And your pilots can level up as they kill enemies. They get experience points. And so as they level up, they earn different upgrades. Like maybe they increase the mech that they're in their max health, or grant them additional movement, or additional reactor cores, which is a resource that you spend to like upgrade your mechs while you are playing. And you really like this one pilot and you had them all leveled up. You can send them back in time so that you can use them in your next run. So you get a little bit of a leg up. It's not huge, but you get a little bit of a leg up for the next time that you go in. Other than that, progression is contained to your individual run. So as you accomplish objectives on each map, there's usually 2 or 3 objectives. You will earn a resource that at the end of each island, which is basically, I think there's like 5 or 6 missions you complete on each island, and then you fight like the boss of the island, and then you get to spend what's called reputation, which is the currency that you earn by completing these objectives on different upgrades. And those upgrades can be different weapons. You can have 2 sort of tools equipped on each mech, and they can be weapons or passive upgrades, usually, which need those reactor cores to power them up. So you're making these sort of micro decisions on how to upgrade your mechs. And that also affects the missions, because maybe you do want a building to take a hit if it means you can take an action to accomplish one of these objectives. Like it kind of complicates the decision making process a little bit. But that's the sending surviving pilots back in time is really the only sort of.
Well, the only other thing is that as you play, you will find new pilots to fill your mechs.
Every time you rescue a pilot, either through like if you accomplish all the missions on all the objectives on one island without failing any, you get a choice of rewards, and one of them's always a pilot. And so you pick them, and then now you can start with them. They go to your hangar, and so whenever you start a mission, you can always start with them.
So if you decide I'm not going to bring forward this pilot that did another run, I'm going to start with a new one, you can pick from any of the pilots that you found so far, and while they won't be leveled up, they will have one starting ability that might synergize really well with the squad you're using.
Yes. Okay. And also like you get the achievements and the coins that you can use to purchase new squads. You can also create your own custom squad using 3 mechs from any of the squads that you've unlocked so far.
It's funny when you were talking about the idea of like maximizing your turn, and I forget the term, you're going to remind me, in Hearthstone, it's not cadence,
tempo. Yeah.
Feels a lot like that.
Yeah,
where
for
you're,
sure.
You are always outnumbered in the ways that like in a Hearthstone match, if you're playing like one of the AI bosses and they have way more cards than you and they're So you're always going to be outnumbered. So it's how you take advantage of the situation to make your disadvantage less of one.
And that is that's a really tricky concept to wrap your mind around, but it is so essential to this game. And it's so rewarding once you wrap your mind around it, in that maybe it doesn't make the most sense for me to spend my whole turn going to kill this enemy. Maybe it makes more sense to spend this one turn blocking two spawn points, because then I gain tempo. I have accomplished two things at that point instead of just the one thing of killing this enemy. It is funny because it is the same grid size as a chessboard, and it really reminds me of, I played a lot of chess last year after we had just had Henry. Like, that was my go-to like game that I could play like on my phone or whatever. And what I did a lot of were these chess puzzles, which would show you a board of a game in progress, and you have one move and you have to find the ideal move, and you spend a lot of time looking at it, trying to figure out what the ideal move is going to be that's going to either win you the game or capture a queen or do something to turn the game around. That is all this game is puzzles of how can I save myself. And on easy mode, it's fun. Like, on easy mode, it's like, okay, you're going through and you're blasting enemies. You can still earn unlocks that you can use in any other thing, so it's very forgiving in that sense. If you are having trouble with the game, just play it in easy mode. Go unlock some new pilots, get some achievements.
And I found it still rewarding. Like, it was very easy, creatively, but it's still rewarding. Yeah, it's
and you
satisfying.
Can still get your, I got my clock clean. Like, I had been playing on normal, doing okay. But I watched a guide video with Russ in it where he said, you know, try playing on easy to get familiarized. I was like, yeah, I'm going to try that. Switched it to easy. Literally, first map, first mission, I lost two of the, like, six health points that you start out with. Just got absolutely shadracked.
A mission can go haywire.
It can break bad so fast. I mean, like, with one bad turn, you could... And again, the weird thing is, you can always see it, right? But, like, sometimes you get to a point, or at least I do, where I'm like, you know what? It's fine. I'm just going to do... I have to do something, because, like, I've been staring at it for so long. I'm just going to do something and try to push through this, like, mental block I'm in. And then all of a sudden, oops, like, three buildings got destroyed.
Yeah. Because you can also put yourself in positions where you go to one, you spend your turn putting all three of your mechs on one end of the map to deal with a fire over there. And then on the next turn, if all the enemies go to the other side of the map, you're fucked. Like, you have screwed yourself over. Like, there is also a consideration of, like, how can I make sure that I am setting up a defensible position for the next turn? This is my favorite kind of game, in that there are, especially when it comes to, like, strategy games, in that there's limited things you can do and infinite ways that it can, like, play out. And where this game succeeds is there are infinite ways it can play out, but it shows you everything. So if you can't pull it off, it's not because the game did something to screw you over. It is because of a bad decision you made in the past. It is because you didn't set up these defensible positions. It's because you didn't spend your turns as efficiently as possible.
Right.
Like,
that they give you, you can revert, if you screw up, you can revert a turn.
Yes, once per battle, you can start a turn.
Yeah, that's just on easy, though, right?
No, it's on all the difficulties.
Everything.
It's a fucking masterpiece. Like, it might be my favorite strategy game, literally ever. I think it's incredible, and it's one of those games that is, I learned this had a name, by the way, because I tweeted about this and a lot of people let me know it's called the Tetris effect, where if you expend a lot of sort of mental energy with something, and it happens commonly with games, and that's why it's called the Tetris effect, you will have dreams about it. I have dreams about Into the Breach, about how to, like, spend a turn. And of course I do, because I've spent 15 minutes agonizing over a single turn in a single fight. Like, it is an incredible fucking game, and I cannot recommend it highly enough. And it came out early this year, right? I hope it is still sort of fresh in my memory when it comes time to talk about Game of the Year stuff, because it's such an incredible game.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I hope by then it's out on Switch, because it would be that so friggin' good on Switch.
I keep telling myself, I told myself after I beat it on normal mode, I was like, okay, I'm going to stop now, because this game's going to come out on some sort of mobile platform and it's going to take over my life, and I'm looking forward to that, but I can't put it down. I cannot. Yeah. I can't stop thinking about it.
Yeah, it's great. Cool.
Russ, what do you got, baby?
My game of the week, of the month is whatever.
I cannot believe we used to try to do this on a weekly basis. I can't
believe
very
bold.
Were there a
bold
lot more
people.
Video games back then, honestly? Because
well,
like,
we did a lot of mobile stuff.
Yeah, that's
right.
What's weird is there are more games now. Like, I think it would be doable now. I really don't know what was going on back then.
We could, I don't know. Four games a week would be tough to do anyway. So my game is Owlboy, which came out last year in Steam. I didn't play it then. It's out on Switch now. And Owlboy was a game, as I understand it, was in development for like 10 years, similar to Stardew Valley in the sense it was like essentially a guy who worked on it for a very, very long time in a very small studio. It was kind of his dream project, and his dream project was to make this kind of, it's not quite a Metroidvania, it's like an action-adventure 2D side-scrolling game where you play as a mute owl boy, who's like a humanoid owl thing, who is trying to save his friends and save the world against pirates and various other critters. It is a gorgeously animated and scored 2D game. Beautiful, beautiful to sprite work and animation artifacts, and the soundtrack is spectacular. And on Switch it works really well because, again, it's a, you know, you can take it anywhere, and by nature of it being 2D, it's easy to control and it has no performance issues or anything like that.
I've heard people refer to its genre in a way that really crystallizes it for me as a vertical platformer, because you can fly, like that's the whole thing, and it's very, very like up and down focused.
It is very vertical, but I wouldn't call it a platformer because it's not really, it's more
a lot of skill involved, like, with
the jumps.
Yeah, I mean, you literally like float and move around, like it's not like you're flapping. But the most of the puzzles in the game are more about like moving blocks or like plugging like vents so that air stops rushing and stuff like that. It's not really an action game per se, although there are action sequences and boss fights and combat, but most of it is about like using the environment to succeed. And I think those puzzles are good. But I think why it doesn't quite do it for me in the ways that like similar games have is because I think the world, it's very hit or miss in terms of like the world itself. So you'll go into a town and it'll be amazingly detailed and you'll see these like cool shops and everything's like really like amazingly designed, and then once you leave those like very handcrafted areas, it starts to feel a little bit like samey and a little bit like lacking in that level of detail, where you'll like go into a cave system and like a lot of the caves feel very similar to one another. And it doesn't quite feel like that same vibrant world that they created. And the gameplay is good, and it's interesting in that, like, you personally do not do any combat. You actually carry people that fight for you, and you can, like, swap your companions around, like, who you're carrying. And they have different abilities, so they're the ones actually doing the combat. So it's an interesting mechanic. But the gameplay, I've probably put in, like, 5 hours or so, and the gameplay hasn't quite clicked for me in the way that Metroidvania games that work, games like Ori or you know, even like the latest Metroid game that we talked about
Iconoclast?
Last year.
Iconoclast
is another good example.
I haven't sunk nearly enough time into it to really pass any sort of judgment one way or the other, but I played for maybe an hour or two this morning, and I was left with the sense of like wondering when the game was going to start, like the actual when I'd be into the meat of the game proper, because I was doing like a lot of wandering around and nothing particularly like difficult or challenging. And
the first hour is very throat cleary.
Yeah, that's probably good. That's a good way of putting it. And that was sort of the experience that I had.
Yeah, it gets better. It gets more interesting, but it the like meat and potatoes like 10-second loop that you're doing for the gameplay doesn't feel like amazing. I think everything else is like very strong, and again, if you're looking for like a enjoyable 2D side scrolling game on Switch, maybe you played through Shovel Knight. I think Shovel Knight is a better game, but I think this is still good and enjoyable and gorgeous.
Did
as well,
we
so.
Speak on the fact this is only somewhat related? But did we speak on the fact that Dead Cells is coming to Switch?
I mean, my life will be complete when that game comes to Switch. God willing, it runs well, because that would be heartbreaking.
It's going to run perfect. And all our dreams will come true.
Jesse got the promise from the dev. Said perfect frames.
Perfect frames. Perfect frames. No drops.
Yeah, I don't know when that's actually coming to Switch, but sometime this year, hopefully.
Because all the consoles. Switch, PS4, Xbox.
Yeah.
Those are the consoles.
At some point. I got uncle works at Nintendo, said Sonic's coming too.
Really?
Yeah, Sonic's first Nintendo game.
Oh my god, I'm so excited.
The question is this, will Mario be on it? I don't know, but my uncle says...
They have a bit of a history.
My uncle says yes. So, but this is podcast exclusive, so don't tell anybody.
Scoop, don't tell anyone.
Shh. Into the Breach?
Yeah, without a doubt. Into the Breach is my game of the year so far.
Wow, really?
I have no hesitation saying that whatsoever. It is the best game that I've played so far.
Well, it's not mine, so how do you rectify that, Russ?
Well, I'm right, so that's all that matters.
It's weird. Like, I have spent a lot more time playing Monster Hunter World. Monster Hunter World occupies, like, my favorite type of genre, this, like, RPG with, like, dope progression and multiplayer, so you can show off all your stuff and work together, showing off like how you've customized your character and working with other people who've done the same. Like that's my favorite genre, hands down, and it's a really good game in that genre. Into the Breach is such a different thing that is also my favorite game that's ever come out in a genre that I don't really is not one of my favorite genres, and I think that's like kind of special in a different way. I don't know.
It's just, Into the Breach is just so dense. It's like, what is that? A cappuccino? What's the really dense coffee?
Cappuccino is like
espresso?
When you take
cappuccino.
Off.
Cappuccino. It's like
espresso.
A cappuccino.
It's espresso.
You just need a little cup.
It's espresso.
Is it?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, so cappuccino. You just need a little cup.
Oh my gosh.
It is spectacular.
That like dilemma where I'm like torn between these two games is like, I'm actually kind of excited for the...
Well, it's actually not a torn because Subnautica won last week, so we're never going to talk about Monster Hunter again last month.
Actually, we have to do this right now because it's March. It's the end of the quarter.
No. Oh, yeah, we got to do... No, but Subnautica won last
also,
month.
This is the end of February. We haven't done March yet.
No.
Yes.
Monster Hunter won January because that came out.
No, it did not.
Yes, it...
Subnautica won
January.
It won both months? What the fuck's wrong with you guys?
That's two months, we haven't done February.
We've only done the second episode of this year.
Right.
Oh, you're right.
Well, it is, yeah, 2 months.
Well, wait, we let Monster Hunter World lose to Subnautica?
Yeah, buddy.
I stand by it.
Listen, guys, I don't know. I don't know if this is... First off, I want to say, I don't know if this decision is legitimate without talking about Metal Gear Survive. So I'm going to talk about that for 15 minutes based on... what I heard about on the Giant Bobcast, I guess, because I'm not going to play that.
Oh, God, it's so bad.
Is it bad?
It's
so
bad. Yes, I played it too much for the stupid guide that I was writing. It's terrible.
Didn't make it to
you had a guide? You spent time on a guide? You were like, people are going to be just drooling for
these
tips.
Well, I figured that nothing was coming out this month, so I was like, well, we might as well.
So March is not... March is a little rough.
Actually, it's not. It's much better than February, I'll tell you that, in terms of releases.
By the way, this is out already, but Subsurface Circular is out on Switch. If you haven't played it yet, go play that. It's great. Also,
I hear it's very good.
Turok 2 came out on Xbox One. What the fuck? Seriously?
No. All right, do we need to decide what the better game between Subnautica
Into the Breach
and Into the Breach?
No, not until March.
That's next month's problem.
No.
I can't understand. I need someone to explain this Turok news to me, please.
I want to talk about March real quick because it's actually a pretty busy month. So Pit People came out already when we're recording this. That's the Behemoth turn-based strategy game, which I'm going to try and I'm very excited. Also coming out is Kirby on Switch, which might be good. Burnout Paradise Remastered, which will be fun.
Yes.
I mean,
Sea of Thieves.
Sea of Thieves, which I'm very, very excited about, and Far Cry 5.
Far Cry 5. Also, the first FMV game I have no interest in playing, Super Seducer, is out. So gonna have that to avoid at all costs.
Detective Pikachu comes out in March.
Ni No Kuni 2?
You're making stuff up.
No one cares
it's
about that.
Fear Effects game out? Sure.
That's wild. Yeah, March is gonna be good.
We'll see. But that is going to do it for us for this month. Congratulations to Into the Breach and to all of our nominees. It's an honor just to be on the show, I assure you. And but we're going to talk about all the great games in March next time. But until then, for Russ Freshtick, Chris Plant, and Griffin McElroy, my name is Justin McElroy. And be sure to join us again next month for the besties, because shouldn't the world's best friends pick the world's best games?
Besties!